Let me start. Thank you for coming to this seminar by LISI, the LSE Research Unit on Southeast Europe. Before I introduce the speaker, I would like to just make two quick announcements that I will forget afterwards, so I will make them now. So we have our next seminar, as you can also see here, is in a month's time on Tuesday, 15 November. One of our visiting fellows, Yaroslav Biozrinsky, is presenting on the politicization of energy security in Southeastern Europe. However, before that, on the Tuesday, 25th of October, in the same room here, we have a public event with Marko Djuric, the director of the Office of Kosovo and Metohija, of the government of the Republic of Serbia. He's going to talk, obviously, on the big issue around Kosovo, the Belgrade-Pristina dialogue, the normalization of relations and regional stability. So this event is on Tuesday, 25th of October, and you're all welcome to attend. Now, we usually say this, it's a great pleasure to have our speaker with us today, but it is indeed a very great pleasure to have Iva Tomic with us today. Iva is a research associate at the Institute of Economics in Zagreb, but she has also been a visiting fellow here at LISI last year, and she has spent, last academic year, before the summer, and she has been a good citizen here at LISI, and I hope it was a very productive year. Some of the productivity of last year is what she's going to talk to us today. I would like to say that Iva is not only a good fellow of LISI, but also really a rising star in labor economics in Croatia. She's been very active doing research in the field of labor economics and applied microeconometrics, but also in other issues sort of broadly related, including public finance. She works at the Institute of Economics with a very strong team, I should say. She has a PhD in economics from the University of Ljubljana. And she, as I said, she has been working at the Institute, and she's having a developing record of publications in the field of labor economics, not only in Croatia, but also looking at other countries more comparatively in the region. So today she's going to talk to us about Croatia's lost generation, youth unemployment, education and training in Croatia since the crisis.
Thank you, Vasilis. It was really nice. Okay, just a second. So, as Vasilis already said, I'm Iva. I would like to welcome you all. Some of you I know, some of you I don't know, so we can meet after my presentation if you would like. Also, this is the title of my presentation, but I really do hope that this is not lost generation for Croatia. I have to say that this work that I will be presenting today has been conducted during my research stay here at the LSE in collaboration with Professor Monastiriotis, so I have to thank him. Also, while I'll be presenting some of the results, you can ask him questions as well, not only me, so it's good to have him here. So let's start. Okay, this is the outline of my today's presentation. I don't know the background of all of you sitting here, so it might get a bit technical for some of you, but I will try to simplify it as most I can. The scheduled time is 45 minutes for me, so I put these policy initiatives at the end, which is not usually something that you would put at the end, but if we don't have enough time to discuss about that, we can do it during discussion later on. So let's begin. As some of you know, but some of you maybe not, because you're not interested in the Croatian economy, Croatia has had a really deep and long-lasting recession in recent years. So 2014 ended as a sixth consecutive year with negative real GDP growth. Cumulative drop of real GDP was 13% as of 2009. the consequences of the recession were strongly demonstrated on the labor market. The unemployment rate almost doubled in this period between 2008 and 2014. I have to stress here that in the period before the crisis, Croatian economy was, so to say, booming. It was growing, the situation on the labor market was really improving. 2008 recorded some record low unemployment rates. So not only did the overall unemployment rate increase, but what became more obvious, that the youth unemployment has grown much rapidly than the overall rate. And in 2013, it became like a serious issue on a daily agenda in all the media, in political programs or whatever. So in 2013, the official unemployment rate for the population age between 15 and 24 was 50%, which means like that half of the active youth population was unemployed at that time. Of course, the activity rate for this group is about 30%, 30-something percent, which means that not half of the youth population was actually unemployed, but still this is really large number and a serious problem. Also, I mentioned here population aged 15 to 29 because this is the population that I will be talking about today. Why 15 to 29? Because the conventional 15 to 24 population is more suited for some other European countries. In Croatia, youths are considered to be all those people up to the age of 30. Even policy measures that are intended for youth population are till the age of 29. One of the reasons for this is prolonging higher education above the age of 24 and similar things. So in the work that I will be presenting, I will focus on the youth population between 15 and 29. So for this population group, the unemployment increased by more than 15 percentage points. What is also, so this is something that you can observe in the graph if you would like. So these are the quarterly unemployment rates for different age groups in Croatia. This orange line is for a working age population between 15 and 64, and all other lines or bars show unemployment rates for youth population. We start with the year 2007. Obviously, the highest unemployment rate is for the youngest age group between 15 and 19. These are teenagers. Their unemployment rates are really high, above 80% in 2013. However, the activity rate for this age group is 15% or even lower. So most of them are still in education. But those of them who leave education and go to a labor market have actually very huge unemployment rate.
Excuse me, just a quick question. The compulsory schooling, what, is it the age 16 or when does it?
15. Yeah, so it's more, it depends, and at the time of year you are born, but only elementary school is compulsory by law.
That includes what, year 1 till year 9 or?
Yeah, yeah. So at the age of 15, you are supposed to go to high school, to secondary education, or some people drop out. Some people drop out during the secondary education. However, the dropout rate in Croatia is rather low, so most of the people actually go to secondary education, either vocational or some general program or whatever. Actually, dropout rate for people at the age of 18 is the lowest one in EU, according to official statistics. But I'm not exactly sure on that. But most of the people actually continue with their education, with their secondary education, either I don't know, in some form. So that's why this activity rate for people in the age between 15 and 19 is 15 or even less percent. This is something to compare Croatia with with other EU countries. So this is interesting. Croatia is a red line. These are years. So after Greece and Spain, we are the worst. But okay, I applaud you. Greece is the Greece is the highest. So, but you see, this is the EU average, and for example, Slovenia, which is a country similar to Croatia, they were both a member of the same country not so long ago, and similar has like somewhere around the EU average. Of course, Germany is below everyone. So this is something, especially if you look at the year 2013, this is something to be worried about. This is again age group 15 to 29. Here I show different measures of youth unemployment in Croatia. So why differ between unemployment rate and this relatively newly introduced concept, so-called NEET? This NEET means not in employment, education and training, which means that in this group are all unemployed, so not employed, but also all those inactive people who are not in education. Why is this concept of NEET rate important? It has been shown that in order to be considered as unemployed, a person should be actively looking for a job, register at the employment office, I don't know, write CVs, apply for open positions or whatever. But sometimes, and very often in some cases, some of these people are not actively searching for a job, but they are still inactive, and especially if they are young, this is a serious problem. So we have some dropouts that just drop out of education and do not go into labor market, or we have some people who finished their education and cannot find a job. It depends. So this NEET concept covers a little bit wider issue of youth unemployment problem, not only in Croatia but in other countries as well. European Commission also stresses the importance of the NEET population and focuses the measures, even this European guarantee, to be focused on this not in employment, education and training group. The third measure is unemployment ratio, which actually compares the number of unemployed youth people with the overall population in that age group. So unlike the unemployment rate, which has active population in the denominator, this is the entire population. So here I mention this NEET rate for youths is 22% in 2014. It also increased from between 2008 and 2014, and it's more than 6 percentage points higher than in the EU, than the average EU 28. So this is just a brief background or motivation why I even study this problem. So huge unemployment rate increased during the crisis, much higher than the comparable EU countries. Different indicators show, again, serious problems and similar things. So another thing that I wanted to stress out here in the introduction is, although the crisis has emphasized that this is a problem, although we saw the increase in the crisis and why this problem became important, however, this labor market exclusion of the youth population, not only on the youth, but on the overall population in the has been pressing over a longer period of time in these Southeast European countries, including Croatia. So President of Croatia said yesterday that she doesn't like this term Western Balkans, but these countries are most often named as Western Balkan countries. So they have really huge levels of inactivity and non-participation on their labor markets. including youth population. This was the case even before the crisis. There are some works that discuss this issue that emerged after the transition or during the transition or whatever. So the average youth unemployment and these need rates are more than twice as high as those in the EU. The papers or research that has been doing more in-depth analysis of why the labor markets in the Western Balkan countries are the way they are, in a really poor condition. They say that they have structural roots, including the delayed transition, high share of informal sector, poor investment climate, and skill mismatches, as well as significant dependence on remittances. So these are just some authors that deal with these topics. I will not go too much into this. I will just show you one graph. So I call this extended Europe. So this is EU 28 plus Western Balkan countries with youth unemployment and need rates. You can see that on the left hand side part of the graph, besides Greece and Spain, as we already mentioned, are all these Western Balkan countries. Especially, so these are ordered according to the youth unemployment rate, but if you look at the orange or these need rates, which means that apart from the officially unemployed, they include also the inactive, so youth population not included in employment nor in education, these rates are even higher. So with Bosnia and Kosovo as a record holders, we have Albania, which has not the highest youth unemployment rate, but really high this youth need rate, Macedonia, Serbia, Croatia. So as for the former Yugoslav countries, only Slovenia is an exception. Also, one can notice here that in most of the comparative economic studies, Croatia was usually put in the context of the transition countries, of the countries of Central and Eastern Europe, including Slovenia, but also comparing it with Hungary, Czech Republic, Slovakia, and similar. However, this is just one illustration, but you can look at the other data. Also, the effect of the crisis and how fast was the recovery and what has happened. So it seems that Croatia has much more similarities with the southern part of the Europe, including members of the EU, than with these Central and Eastern European countries that, in a way, emerge into this transition process towards market economy at the same time. So, as you might see in these graphs, also read all around. So despite the policy and social importance of this issue of youth unemployment, studies examining empirically the individual and environmental factors contributing to non-participation or non-employment of youth in the labor market or training are rather limited, or in the case of these countries, Western Balkan countries, are virtually non-existent. Also in Croatia, this high increasing youth unemployment, as I already mentioned, has received a lot of attention from both the public and the policy makers. However, academic contribution, especially empirical economics, is still missing. There are some works in the field of sociology or education policies or some other social sciences, but real economic papers, you cannot find them. So what was my goal? To partially fill in the gap in the literature by examining more closely the determinants of this youth unemployment and non-participation, that is, this not in employment, education and training population for Croatia. So let's start. I will just go briefly over this. If somebody is interested, I have a list of references at the end, so I will not go into details. But literature examining these individual factors that define more closely the risk of unemployment for youth population suggests that females, those less educated, those coming from different deprivileged backgrounds, including immigrants, are more exposed to being unemployed at a younger age. As I said, in most of these Southeast European or peripheral countries, there are no empirical studies on these issues, but recently there have been some examples for Greece, for Spain, Italy, even Ireland, that at the beginning of the recession had some really huge issues with high youth unemployment, but they recovered more quickly and these things started to solve somehow. Also, some studies focusing more on the need population and comparing different countries. For example, the study by Einhorst and Neder examining youth unemployment in Mediterranean countries, which are, as I said, somehow more specific in this aspect: France, Greece, Italy, Portugal, and Spain. So, this is it. Now I will discuss what I did while I was sitting here. So this was just an introduction. So what did we do? We took the labor force survey data for Croatia in the period between 2007 and 2014. These are micro data. Economists among you are familiar with this. Labor force surveys based on the International Labor Organization methodology. So a lot of countries in the world are actually conducting this survey, so then you can have comparable data, official unemployment, employment rates or activity that I already shown are based on this labor force survey, and Eurostat publishes it for European Union countries. However, I obtained within the project that I was working on the individual microdata for all these years. So we have period before the crisis, 2007 and 2008 in Croatia were really booming years. Crisis, and also the last year, 2014, was the start of a recovery, actually. So we focused on the youth population between the ages of 15 and 29 with respect to their labor market status. So we compared the excluded, unemployed or needs, how we call them now, with the employed youth population, but also those excluded with those in education. I have to stress that these are mutually exclusive statuses, so employed population and unemployed population is defined according to International Labour Organization standards, and a person who is defined as employed cannot be at the same time unemployed or in education. So for those people that might attend some form of formal education and be employed at the labour market, in this case they are defined as employed according to this methodology. So variables that we used in our analysis, are usually used in this type of analysis. So demographic characteristic, household or socioeconomic characteristic, and area characteristics. I will not go into detail. You will see later on in our results. So this is some basic descriptive statistics of the youth population in Croatia. I show here only the data for years 2008 to 2013, because to show for all those years it would be too much space used. Why these 2 years? Because record low youth unemployment in 2008 and record high in 2013. I will not explain each of these numbers separately, just a brief summary. So employed youths are older than those excluded from the labor market and those in education, which is expected, especially those in education are younger. What is interesting, for example, male workers experienced stronger unemployment growth in the crisis because we can see that female share decreased substantially between these 2 years. Before the crisis, female share among the excluded or need population was 60%, and in 2030 it was below 50%. Also, more foreign-born youngsters are present among the need group than the among two other groups. There is a visible increase in all these groups of the population who finished higher education. This is partly a change that happened irrespective of the crisis, introduction of Bologna process and introduction of private higher education institutions and some other forms of higher education certificates or whatever. Okay. Also, a disproportionately high share of youth needs in central and eastern Croatia comparing to northern part and the southern part of the country. So what was the main research question? Who has the highest risk of unemployment among the youth population, or what are determinants of the unemployment or non-participation in the labor market or in education for youth population? So unlike in the standard studies that examine this type of a problem in labor economics, which usually focus on comparing the unemployed population with the employed one, we actually compared the unemployed or need population with both those employed and education. One of the reasons for this is definitely that this is a specific group of the population. These are young people, and as we managed to see in this table, most of them or half of them is still in education at this age. So comparing only the unemployed with the employed would be kind of not really representative, because young people are having different choices when participating in the labor market, unlike the, so to say, adults, which have two alternatives, employment or unemployment. So I show here just to see it more easily. So we have youth population, and we compare those who are searching for a job, or those, as we call them, needs, versus those who work, and also those who search for a job versus those who are still in education. I will skip details on this because I assume that many of you are not are not really familiar with, and especially when people see formulas that they kind of do this. But I have to put it in because this is what I did. This is the main part. So I use Probit model to evaluate the contribution of different characteristics to the individual risk of unemployment over the observed period. I did yearly Probit regression, so for all the years between 2007 and 2014, vis-a-vis both the unemployed and those in education. Also, I will show you later on marginal effects, but this is not something you should be concerned about. If somebody is interested into details, we can discuss a bit more. So continue with the model. Besides us comparing youths unemployed or need youths with those employed and those in education, we wanted to go more deeper, so to say, or Vasilis forced me to do that. So we asked ourselves, how do young people enter a status of labor market exclusion? So how do they come to the point where they are not participating in the labor market nor in the education or training system? So we hypothesized two competing paths, each entailing a two-stage self-selection process into non-participation. So the first path, we called it opting, starts with a self-selection step, whereby individuals select themselves into education or training, and those who are not self-selected into education subsequently compete in the labor market, with some of them being sorted into employment and other are being excluded. So this is similar as the previous diagram. We had only like youths and labor market sorting and this other. So first path on the left, we call it opting. So the first step is education choice. So young person either goes to education or to participate in the labor market. So this, and in the second step, it becomes employed or unemployed. And the second path that we hypothesize, we call it coping, considers a process whereby young people are first sorted away from employment, so which means that employers cream off the most employable ones, and those who are not employed then select themselves, not selected into employment, then select themselves into education or non-participation or need status, depending on their characteristics. So on the right-hand side, this is the coping path. So in the first step, you have labor market sorting, which means that the best ones or those who want to be based on their characteristic are employed, and those non-employed either choose or invest into education or continue to search for a job. I have to stress out that this is not a process that goes like a timeline. It's a hypothetical reasoning. So we hypothesize these two paths. You should not like imagine them, okay, first I go to labor market and then if I'm not employed, then this can happen. But this is more taking into account characteristics of the young population. We count in this first step self-selection into
participation. You observe characteristics, observable that these, in order to identify which these two groups are, right?
Yeah. Okay, so how did we do this paths? So this is again a standard approach in labor economics, the problem of non-random selection of young people into active population. In the first step, these probit models are corrected using the Heckman correction for selection. To simplify, we control that the choice between employment and unemployment is conditional on an individual participation in the labor force or non-participation in education, while the choice between employment and education is conditioned on not being employed. I will, again, not go into these formulas. So what does this mean? With these two alternative first stage choices, the first one, education versus labor market participation, the second one, employment versus not employment, enable us to estimate not only the role that these different individual characteristics actually play for the selection between unemployment and education and unemployment-employment, but also of the mode in which prediction about the risk of unemployment change when allowed for these two type of first stage selection. So if we were left at the first part of our model, we just probit and say, okay, these are characteristics that define if a person is employed versus unemployed versus employed or unemployed versus those in education, it would not give us the complete picture or final answer. Okay, so here we are at the results. These are the results of the first part of the model, of the probit model, where we identify by individual or household characteristics that identify people who are more at risk of unemployment or at exclusion or need status. So these can be interpreted as probabilities. In the first graph we have age variables. So orange lines are representing a comparison of excluded youth population versus those in education, and blue lines are versus those in employment. In the first graph, the reference value is the youngest age group, 15 to 24. Also in the last graph, the reference value for region is the not Central and Eastern, but Northwestern Croatia. Okay, so here is the summary of the main results. The probability of an youth individual being selected away from need status and into employment increases with age, which is kind of expected, while the probability of being in education declines with age, without any substantial changes during the observed period. So it means that recession did not have too much influence into this. Also, these age differences are much more pronounced in the case of education than in the case of employment. To simplify the results, we could say that late teens, those between 15 and 19, are facing the risk of unemployment when they are not in education, while those in their late 20s face it when not employed. So again, females have higher probability of being needs than in employment, but a lower probability than of being need than in education. In a way, these gender differences in the need versus education dimension have intensified and become significantly statistically more significant. We say that the ranking of outcomes between genders is quite clear. So if they are not neat, males are more likely to be employed and females are more likely to be in education. Okay, married individuals are more likely to be neat, especially in comparison to those in education. Again, those in education are mostly younger groups, and while in education, probably not married and things like that. Okay, an interesting result comes for the foreign-borns. They are more present in the sorting into neat population, which starts declining in recent years, which means that they have higher vulnerability of being neat if not in employment, than of being neat if not in education.
So, what foreign-born means in this context, because if you're talking about the former Yugoslavia, somebody who's foreign-born, somebody who happened to be born in what is now Serbia, as opposed to, let's say,
we don't have, this is imprecise measure actually, because we don't have this is the best thing that we do have on this issue. However, this variable in the literature is usually very important, because immigrants and those foreign-borns are kind of usually deprivileged, usually more present in the needy or unemployed youth population. We don't have the exact data on which countries they are born. And actually, there are not many people among, I think, 7% of the whole youth sample or something like that, below 10% at least. But unlike the older generations, this is also more different, because this generation has not been living in Yugoslavia, so these are really born and raised, or maybe not raised, but some of them in a different country, statistically, officially in different countries. Previous generation, it was the same country, so it would not be easily defined. So I assume that a large part of this population is from Bosnia, maybe Serbia or something like that, but again, this shows something. If you are coming from a foreign country, maybe it's your neighbor country, but it's still foreign country, and if you have been deprivileged in the labor market, it shows something. However, the statistical significance of this variable.
The refugees from Bosnia who came in 1991, now
some of them
sort of
might be.
Some of them. But as you go lower down in the age groups, you get less refugees, children, refugee people who were born in Bosnia but left with their families
so
to Croatia, less and less of them. So that's why it declines, because the flow
but
of refugees declined.
Oh, okay. But among the youngest group. So it doesn't decline that much. Statistical significance loses its but it doesn't decline that much.
I mean,
in
if
any
I
way.
May
yeah.
come in and also show you this.
I see that.
So of course, we would want to have sort of foreigners, immigrants and stuff, but we don't have, all we have is foreign born. To the extent that the immigrants are Croats, so they're more similar to the natives, then we underestimate the effect of being, the extent of discrimination. But we would need to have a story similar to what Will was saying, but a bit more developed, to say that the change over time in the effect is related to the changes in the composition of the cohort. But we have we have no knowledge about that. If the size of the cohort changes, there's not necessarily an effect on the estimated effect. If the composition of the cohort changes, it could possibly be that, but yeah.
Okay, thank you for your comment. Okay. Let me, I have to speed up, as Vasilis said. So, Yeah, this is mostly confirmed the descriptive statistics. So we confirmed the things that we observed in descriptive statistics, mostly with the probit estimation. So let me now turn to this second part of the model. So hack probits, again, many tables, but let me just, so we had two different paths. First path was called opting, as I remember. So we compare neat population or excluded or unemployed population with those who work or who are employed. So in the first column, you have the results of the probit estimation. The second and the third column show you the so first and second stage of the probit regression that I showed you earlier. So correcting with Heckman correction for selection. So in the first stage, of this regression, we include additional variable that should control for the selection into participation, into non-education. In the results that I'm showing you, we use the regional unemployment rate. However, we tested several different variables, which all shows more or less similar results. What is important here, I will not go into details about all these results and statistical significance and whatever. It's the last row, which is called row. So you can see that here. So the stars are showing you statistical significance. That in the first path in opting, the statistical significance of row is non-existent. So it's not statistically significant, which means that this selection has not shown to be important. You can also see that by comparing the first two columns for each of these years, which didn't change much. So this is the first path. In the second path, however, a row is significant, which means that the selection into away from employment is significant or important for subsequent choice between the education and the unemployment status. You can also observe that by comparing first the columns, you see that the size of the coefficient changes. So this is just a brief summary of the results of our two competing paths. So in the first path, so net versus employed after selection away from education. As I mentioned, this row is not significant. With a sign of a row, this is a possible interpretation, but I will focus on the second path, neet versus education after selection away from employment, where this selection proved to be significant and important. In the pre-crisis period and the start of the recovery in the 2014, this row has a negative sign, and probable interpretation of this means that non-employable youths choose to invest in education. So they go to labor market, they did not get employment, and then they decide, instead of searching for a job, to continue with their education in a way. Or that employable youth who do not get a job keep on searching rather than going into education. In the periods 2009-2010 and 2011-2012, row has a positive sign, which means that you would become neet or unemployed due to non-employability, or that those who are employable but don't get a job choose education. This is something that has changed in the observed period. So crisis had its effects. I will not go into more detail about discussion because I don't think I have time. This is just some small conclusions. So as I said, what we wanted to do at the beginning, to evaluate the main characteristics or determinants of the risk of unemployment for youth population. But this is like something which is standard in labor economics, doing these probit models, evaluating the risk of unemployment, taking into account this individual household and some similar characteristics. Usually you compare unemployed versus employed population. However, since we are dealing with youths, we follow two different how to say, we followed two different approaches. So we compared unemployed or this need population with not only employed but also with those in education, because a lot of young people is in education. Also, in order to take into account non-random selection into participation in the labor market or away from employment, we did a two-step regression by Heckman correction for selection in the first step. So this relative importance of these alternative paths that we show here offers useful insights not only about the individual preferences but also some wider processes that lead to youth exclusion from the labor market. So as I already mentioned, this selection into education, or opt-in as we called it, proved to be limited relevance for explaining the subsequent sorting into non-participation, both prior and during the crisis. However, this labor market sorting, so when people are getting first employed and then choose between education and searching for a job, appears to be highly significant in determining subsequent choices between non-participation and education, with the implication that the employability remains a significant factor whether non-employed youth invest in education or training. These results are consistent with some of the views in the literature that see education in the Western Balkans as being of limited relevance for subsequent employment outcomes, this part that opting does not affect subsequent sorting. We'll probably know more about this. The education does not target more in need of skill development or acquisition, those least employable, which is shown that this sorting has a positive impact on subsequent coping away from the need status. So I see by your faces that for some of you this was technical, although I skipped all the formulas.
Technical.
Well, I think the audience is kind of not really into labor economics in general. However, I think now it's time for the discussion. I will leave these policy initiatives in Croatia for discussion because I think some of you might be interested into that. Vasilis, you might add whatever you want. And
okay, thanks, Eva. We will open it to discussion. I'm tempted to sort of say a quick summary.
Yeah,
of,
you can
of,
you can of, say
of what, and then sort of as an introduction also to open to the discussion, because education is so different in the Balkans and in Southern Europe, and it's also social status, you know, what your parents tell you to do and things like that, then it comes into the equation. So starting from the point where you look at employment versus unemployment, then you think, okay, I have to take education as an option in. So the first part of graphs that Eva showed did exactly that, and there you ask, are the things that take you into unemployment when you're in the labor market, so employment versus unemployment, are they the same things that take you into unemployment where you're on the choice between education versus non-employment? And there are some differences that we can discuss, I think a number of interesting results. But then the other point, which is where we got to with a double selection thing, is more on, is it that the good employable people get into jobs and that's why they leave education, and then the rest fight between, you know, whoever can stay in education stays and the other become unemployed? Or is it that people self-select into education, so I know I'm high ability, you know, I'm sort of, I have prospects of doing very well in education, so I stay in education. So what you have actually in the labor market is the least able people, and then some of these people will get jobs, some other people will not get jobs. Now, why is this important, and in relation to that last slide, is because then I need to know who are the unemployable, the unemployed need people, so that the policies that will get to them and that will make them employable should be targeted on the particular kind of path that took them into unemployment. Is it people who are low ability, low employability, as we sort of hideously call it in labor economics, or is it people who have been sort of, you know, creamed out from the labor market, and it's the ones that do not want to go to education or they cannot access education. The implication is that, you know, the type of policy that you want may be different. Yeah. So this is where we go to the results and we find the differences that also Eva mentioned. And of course, I mean, so the policy framework comes from the European Union, the European Youth Guarantee and everything, all the activation policies in some way, but also the significant, and Will also knows very well, innovations in education policy in this country. So this, I think, makes it important to study a case like that of Croatia. So, okay, so that was my summary, and I don't know if I opened the discussion or I killed the discussion, but we have a question.
This is first of all, it's a question of understanding. That is, you have people, and you described this actually at the very beginning, you were describing how you determined whether people were employed or in education, when a lot of these people might be in both. And if it is the case, there's a lot of people who are studying somewhere, have also got jobs, which might be to do with the fact that they have to finance their studies, or expect to finance their studies. My understanding is that you categorise these people as employed, and I'm not quite sure what the implications of that are, because I would assume that, or at least in some cases, the fact that you are working whilst you are studying might enhance your employment opportunities in any case, certainly subsequently. So I'm just intrigued to know how you actually categorise these people and why you categorise, let's say, the students who are working as workers and not as students.
Okay.
Is that what you're doing? Because I think I
yeah, I think I'm doing that. So let me just clarify on this issue. So first of all, in Croatia, there is no dual system of education as in some other European countries. So if you are a student or a pupil, you are not present on the labor market officially. Also, if you are officially employed, you cannot enroll into a higher education on a regular non-paying basis. So, which is most of the students. So, statistically and officially, these two statuses should be separated. Of course, in practice, you have people that are participating in both education and employment, but also into both education and unemployment. So, why we decided to follow this approach? I mentioned earlier that this might pose some problem with the definition, but I wanted to be as close as possible to the official statistics. So I actually followed the official statistics for the employed, for the unemployed, for those rates that we have, and then you have the formal education and training. However, I think that employment based on the methodology of International Labour Organization, and considering employed all that I consider here, might be a bit overestimated, because by that definition you are employed if you worked anything
exactly
in the last week or so.
I'm thinking about it, because you talk, yes, I know there isn't a dual sort of vocational training system, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about a situation where there is actually a proliferation of higher education, which is not financed by grants to students, and therefore whilst you are studying, you are expected, or you expect to support yourself in some way. Now if you go out and looked at people, even at the London School of Economics, you'd probably find a substantial proportion of undergraduate students who have got some kind of job. It might not be for a lot of hours, but those people then start ticking into the employed category. And I'm wondering how much of what you are seeing in this age group in Croatia, who you categorise as employed, are actually people who are basically students that are, I don't know, working in a McDonald's on a Saturday night or something like that.
Yeah, I think it is important. That's why I mentioned it myself. I don't have the exact number. I think I should do that. I'm aware that this is the problem, but then again, you have like, we don't have any dual system of education. When you define something, you have to.
Survey ought to allow you to distinguish those people.
I think in theory, and we may have done, in theory we should sort of use different cut-off points of how many hours per week and stuff.
Yeah.
But what we did definitely was to exclude these people altogether. So rerun the first part of the analysis only for people who are definitely in one status only. Yeah. And the results were, as it always goes, the results were qualitatively the same. But seriously, because also these are very small proportions, you know.
Yeah.
So you will find in the UK people who are
in
education
Croatia
and working
much
at the same time, but these are very small numbers.
Because when you go, okay, when you are in secondary school, most of those people do not work. Okay, they might get something during the summer, so whatever. But in higher education, there are some people who are working. But again, as I said, by law, you cannot enroll in a regular higher education. Okay, there are cases because actually nobody checks it. But you cannot simultaneously be employed and go into higher education.
A full-time job. That's
yeah.
Thing,
yeah. But there are cases, I agree with you, that this exists simultaneously. So. But in the overall sample, it's not such a high percentage.
Will?
Yeah. Okay. I've got three points, actually. The first
okay.
one is related to this issue that Bernard raised. And it's quite complicated because there are different stories at different stages of the education process, and therefore the different age groups within your 15 to 29. For example, in secondary school, we did research looking at vocational education in the Western Balkans, including Croatia, and it turned out that Croatia was the only country where there was some elements of this dual education in the craft sector. And the Association of Crafts has started a program whereby they are giving work experience to vocational school students. So there is some elements of that. But in general, I say that the secondary school, the participation rate at secondary education is so high that actually most of the young people in that age group are actually in education. So the participation rate that were there will be very low. On the other hand, when you get to the age of 19, you go to higher education, then the participation rate in higher education is much lower. So you've got a distinction between these sub-age groups. And then within higher education, I mean, on our research on higher education in the Western Balkans, we've not including Croatia, but we found that the proportion of higher education, graduates from higher education who had any work experience during their higher education is very low. So if Croatia is like those other countries, which
yeah.
it probably is, then I would expect that most of the higher education students between the ages of 19 and, let's say, 24, have not had any work experience. On the other hand, going even further, there are some students who have extended their student life.
Many.
Become perpetual students who actually are working, although they're still classified as students. So either you sort of go to university, you complete your degree, you come out without any education experience, or you sort of stay in higher education, but actually you're not in higher education, you're working.
Yeah.
And you're just sort of turning up at the universities, you keep repeating your exams until eventually by some sort of random process you pass everything. So, you know, people
yeah, but there is a official statistics from the Croatian Employment Service for youth population that is registered as unemployed. Most of them are without any work experience. So this is
then brings me on to the second point, do you distinguish between vocational school students and
higher education
students
not here.
In the thing, because the story that you're telling makes me the way I understand it is that basically education in Croatia is an alternative to employment, and people are going into education to higher education, not secondary education, because secondary education, most people go there anyway. Probably they only sort of leak out if they've got a good job offer, mm-hmm. which means they're sort of good students. But when it goes to higher education, it's a completely different story, because there's a lower participation rate in the labour market, and it's higher unemployment, then a lot of the students who might have got a job, they look to higher education as an alternative strategy. That was one of our motivations, actually.
when we started to look more into this.
Yeah, but I would expect that there's a difference between the vocational students in that respect compared to the higher education students. So you might want to distinguish between the two.
I haven't distinguished that because, okay, I know your studies, and I know that you focus on vocational education, but actually, when you look at the percentage of the population in this secondary education youth population, the percentage of those attending vocational education is not that big, actually.
It's secondary education as well. It's high. And thirdly, little point is, why don't you sort of put these two things together in a multinomial logit regression? I think you have three choices.
we were discussing that.
You've heard us talking about I'll say something so on the second point that you said about sort of the education being the kind of a coping strategy. It was our motivation and, you know, the expectation, and it is nice, it's really nice that it actually comes out in the econometric results. So, you know, whatever one believes about double selection, Heckman, and things like that. So when we say that people, you know, the high ability go to education and the rest of are fighting in the labor market, this process doesn't come out as statistically significant. Whereas when we say, okay, you know, there's people who are faced with unemployment, and then some of them sort themselves into education and some actually stay unemployed or inactive, it really comes significant. It comes significant in a way that makes sense also when it changes over the crisis. So you think, okay, that actually happens in good times, but when unemployment gets over 30%, it doesn't happen. So everybody stays in unemployment and they don't go to the luxury coping in education. But you're right that this may be there's reasons to expect that it could be very different at the university versus at, or even a kind of, you know, how long you stay at the university versus high school ages. Right, okay, sorry, it was not.
Less technical question. The title of the talk is Lost Generation. As a labour economist, do you think that the lost generation, lack of opportunities for young people, that is due to the economy as a whole having problems and simply the economy as a whole failing and there's not enough new enterprises or whatever, or do you think it's due to the problems in the labour market itself, if you be sort of by better training or by perhaps different labour market regulations? Do you think that is it a sort of kind of huge macro problem, or is it something you can deal with by the through labour market economics?
Okay, tough questions. More in some policymakers should answer this, but I will give you my opinion because I'm doing this. This is not everything confirmed by the results in this paper. However, as I said at the beginning, I really hope it won't be a lost generation. The second thing, no, it's not only labor market problem. Now we are discussing about the education system a lot, which is, I think, even bigger problem than the labor market in Croatia, because the labor market somehow changed over this transition, or because yeah, we are in some kind of market economy. Croatia has to participate in the European labor market and other markets as well. However, so the demand side of the labor market is asking for different skills, different set of whatever. However, our education system somehow stuck in the old, not just Croatian, in most of these. I will use the term Western Balkans again. So there is this problem of the supply side of the labor market and the skills as mismatch. So this is something that I put here. I did not discuss it during my presentation, but I thought it would be interesting. So how the policy makers in Croatia think about. So in the National Youth Program, they mentioned, besides lack of previous experience, this mismatch between qualification and the skill demand as the main issues regarding youth unemployment in Croatia. You were asking, is this a labor market or the whole economy? At the moment, or during the last several years, the whole economy was in a really, really bad situation, not just the labor market. So now the economy starts to recover. However, labor market is kind of slow in this respect. It always goes that way, especially after this long-lasting recession. Employers are not really keen to employ suddenly a lot of people, especially when they have a pool of experienced people who they can employ. They don't have to employ young people without any experience. So it's all interconnected, and how to solve it? Okay, the government introduced us with some active labor market policies. Just a second. Okay, so we have active labor market policies. Young people are participating in this in 2014 into one of these measures. Almost 40% of the youth population registered at the Croatian Employment Service participated in this, how they call it, vocational training without commencing employment measure. But this is just an active labor market policy measure. It does not employ you. It is a big question if it actually provides you with a new set of skills that will make you employable in the future, or it is just some kind of transition period, because evaluation of these measures showed that, okay, there is a limited impact of this measure. So what can you do on the labor market? Okay, you can ease labor legislation, which has been done a bit in 2013 and 14. You can introduce some active labor market policies, but again, if you don't have an economy that is booming and that is willing to employ, none of these measures will actually help you. So I think this is more serious problem concerning different aspects of the economy, and as I said, not only economy. So it's not really solvable just by introducing a new set of measures.
I will also say something that when we started, we thought, you know, we will find some sort of cyclical pattern in the results. So okay, we're not talking about sort of a specific economic area level economic variables. We look at unemployment, we look at sort of location, but we thought, you know, the individual characteristics may have different contribution to unemployment over the cycle, and that would allow to tell a story perhaps about sort of, you know, those that entered the labor market when the crisis hit, they would be potentially affected, you know, the scarring effect, we call it, without actually testing for that. And in most, so broadly speaking, the results, we didn't find that cyclicality. So in a way, although unemployment increased, the things that contribute to unemployment in general, with some exceptions, remained broadly the same. So there were, you know, you can talk about sort of differences, but the things remained on the, you know, at last the same. So in that sense, tentatively one could say that, you know, it's not really a lost generation. You know, nothing fundamental has changed in how people are sorted into, sort of end up with unemployment. Okay, there was a question.
Yeah, maybe we can talk later, but maybe you do not have the data, but it would be nice to see kind of a time series before 2007, because because we can't say yes, it's the crisis, and you just have this deep, I mean, you know, 2007, maybe 2008, when it was global financial crisis, and maybe, of course, being the Balkans, we have our own problems as well there, which, you know, slow down the development. So, and I also was wondering that, you know, Croatia has been also during this time at different stages of the, you know, its negotiations with the EU. And you could see at some stage, I saw, like, for example, after 2012 or 13, I don't know what it was, you could see, like, you know, I don't know how they, whether they're allowed now to work in the rest of the European countries. I mean, it would be nice because you don't know what's driving that. And if you want to, you know, to generalize, it would be nice to see the whole patterns and,
yeah.
I mean, it's very interesting.
No?
I haven't seen
anything. As for the data, I wanted to actually use longer term periods. However, unfortunately, actually, the issues with the obtaining individual labor force survey data is really problematic with the Croatian Statistical Office for some reason. Also, the methodology before 2007 was completely different. So actually, okay, we can compare aggregate rates, but even those are kind of so the methodology changed, the way of collecting data and everything, so they are not really comparable, especially if you wanted to do something like this. So you can compare unemployment rates in general, but so this is one issue. The second thing that you mentioned, I actually expected, okay, negotiation, entering the European Union, we will see some spikes. Crisis, we will see some spikes. For example, I don't know, in 2009 GDP fell by almost 7% or something like that. But actually no, and 2007 and 2008, although the global economic crisis started in those years, in Croatia we had those are the best years in, I think, as of the beginning of the 90s. So 2007-2008 had record low unemployment for both youths and the overall population. However, when you look at these characteristics that we looked at, we did not see any jump. So this was something that I did not expect to obtain. Of course, I agree with you. It would be much better if I had the data from the beginning of 2000s at least. However, to include them into this, it's not possible, unfortunately.
It would be nice to follow individuals through, but I guess
that's a different issue. Yeah, it was our original intention, but you cannot do that with the data. So yeah.
Okay, question.
No, so you said that 2008 and 2009 were the best years for Croatia.
Seven and eight.
Because I graduated in Croatia 2008. I know that's when the crisis hit, etc., etc.
Yeah, the second half of 2008, yeah.
Do you believe that data can be distorted? Because a lot of my friends in that generation who graduated then extended their studies to 2012. A lot of people finished studies and then just enrolled courses, just have student rights. So could that have affected the result? Based on that distorted data. Because out of 8-10 people that I graduated in that year.
In which
six,
year?
2000. End of 2008.
Okay, that's the end of 2008. That's when the things started to happen. And as I said, in 2009, we had a big drop, both in the real GDP, in labor market, and everything. But if you look at the year, so I got employment in 2007, and it was really easy for my generation. During 2008, it was also pretty, yeah. Yeah, it was.
When I was studying,
yeah, and my sister, right. who is just a bit younger than me, okay, she got lucky, but her generation, I understand, what are you talking about? So, statistically, and these data actually confirm the statistics, that 2008 was still really in really good shape. End of 2008, the last quarter, showed first signs of the problem, and already first quarter of 2009 was really, really bad. So we had a little bit late recession comparing to some other countries. Probably as things are happening now, Croatia is really dependent on what's going on in the trading partners in neighboring countries. So I think, it has been shown that first the crisis hits our main trading partners, and then after some lags it hit Croatia. But it showed many difficulties that we had. Not only labor market is just one thing. It showed difficulties that we obviously have had many years before, but we couldn't see it because we were borrowing money and living and yeah. So yeah.
Talia and then.
Well, I want to make sure that I understood the two stories of the facts. So would that be that you have more chances to become meat if you start as employed, and then if you can make it, you go towards education, and the other path would be you start in education, and then you go to the labor market later, and you end up as meat because you didn't make it? So these were the two possible paths.
So we don't observe individuals over time. So these are
different
individuals. It's not longitudinal, as we say. Okay. So basically, what we do is that you look at the probability of a person like you, to be in employment or in unemployment, So at one level, and then in the more complex story, we say the person like you being somebody who is not in education, okay? Mm-hmm. So you compare, you get the probability from other individuals, because obviously I don't see somebody being in education and then becoming unemployed or becoming employed. Yeah. So the comparison is with that. So the theoretical probability of a reference, the empirical probability of a reference group. Mm-hmm. But the thing is whether exactly you get from, if you're not in education. If we take into account that you're the type who is not in education, does this tell us more? Can it help us predict whether you're unemployed or employed? Or, I shouldn't take that into account, that you're not that type of education. It doesn't affect the probability. So that's basically it.
My second question is, so it was the period during the crisis that you have examined. Because, as you said, the data is very different before the crisis, so it's difficult to compare with that period. But would it be interesting to compare with another country, sort of a neighbor country, mm-hmm. who has a difference, like a Slovenia, for example, during that period? Also, is there anything about the offer? Because crisis had changed the offer of the jobs, as it did. Something that you cannot see.
Labor demand.
Yes.
The offer of jobs.
Demand. So it has really decreased significantly during these years.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, the labor market got
depressed.
Is there
any way to distinguish between the type of jobs that you can get? For example, if jobs that don't need any higher education have been reduced more than jobs that, for example, in Greece, I saw that all the, because the experience I have my work, related to the media, they were completely people who used to work in television, radios, I take an example. They became unemployed massively, and I don't know, maybe in other sectors, maybe you could find a job as a leaflet distributor or nails painting or so. You could have your. I have examples like that. So you have a degree for higher education, you can be employed. It's just that the offer changes completely. And I wonder if this is something that you can see or maybe not.
It's not. First of all, it's not the aim of this study. Of course, the overall offer of jobs apparently decreased. We could do something for the this is like a different study for focusing on the employed, because for the employed population, you have the data. Into which sectors they are working, which occupations, is it like below or above their educational level, so you can discuss about vertical mismatch and things like that. But the aim of this study was to determine characteristics of an individual or the probability to become unemployed. So it's not an issue. About the comparison with another country, I completely agree with you. I think this that would be really a value added to this paper and in general cases in every paper. However, what is a big issue in this study and in all the similar studies is the data availability or inavailability, because to obtain individual microdata, so most of the countries, as I said, has individual labor force survey with similar or almost the same variables, but to obtain them even for a researcher is really hard. So Eurostat provides some data, but they anonymize it, so you don't have all the details that you wish. It was our
When this paper started, it started as a comparative paper, but then it couldn't be comparative because so the Albanian data do not have parental information, so we couldn't use that. So the Slovenian data have. We cannot get the data after 2011. In Macedonia, you have to physically go to Skopje to use the data. So it was. Okay, last question by the first question.
Where would the last question? I would say that if you wanted me to say what's the youth unemployment rate in country X, I would only say to you what's the unemployment rate in country X, and I'd multiply that by 2. And I'm not quite sure.
1.8.
Croatia looks terribly different from even Germany if you did that for Germany. So. This is the point that was also made over there, I think. In that sense, you know, the problem is the economy, maybe, and not the youth. But if I am right in understanding what you were doing, and that you kind of liked the model which was built around coping rather than the model that was built around selecting, my question is, because that starts off by saying employers cream off somebody, and then, in a sense, you've been interested in that place. Who is it that the employers cream off, and what is it that actually gets people creamed off into employment, even in bad circumstances? Because if there is some category of young people who can get jobs, what is it that makes people get jobs? What is it about their education that they've had or not education they've had, what kind of education they've had, what kind of work experience have they had when they're having education, which comes back to what Will and I were also talking about at the beginning, and what are the predictors of being creamed?
Yeah. Okay, this is something that I've skipped.
Yeah, that's what was
Okay, because I had limited time and did not want to go. So these are characteristics of an individual, of the household of an individual that we use in our models. So this is the second path that showed to be significant statistically. I might look here. So these are original coefficients, not marginal effects, so they're a bit harder to interpret. But you see the
it's so also inverse signs, because we do the
what?
The non-employed, yeah. So
This is need versus those in education. So these are some of the characteristics that show, for example, if you are a female, you have a lower probability to be need than to be in education after being selected or creamed.
I would guess that maybe the secret ingredient of being creamed off, even in bad situations, is something you haven't gotten there, which is personal and family connections.
Yeah, Yeah, that's something you cannot measure.
Sure. Yeah.
But actually, there is so for employed population, youth employed, whatever, you have a lot of information. So if you focus only on the employed, you can get additional information. For example, there is even a question in the survey, in which way did you get employed? So, and one of the suggested answer is through friends and family. So if you focus on the employed, you can get that information. Here we can use only characteristics that we have for all three groups. Like to compare them to have common characteristics. One of the things that we use here is the education of the household head, in order as a proxy for these abilities and some connections and some social connections or which proved to be important in many studies. So this is our proxy for some of these issues, because we could not use anything.
I'm not quite sure, but am I actually looking at the first stage?
The first stage, the opposite coefficients.
You're looking at the coefficients on the first stage, because these are actually the things, aren't they, which have got you into this game.
Yeah, but this is, so the first stage is this creaming off,
right, exactly.
away from employment, but you have to look at the coefficients. They are the opposite, because
so it is older people are more likely to be creamed off, to be employed, okay, and that also has, you know, this is not causal.
I got to reverse this.
Because this is the probability of not getting employed.
Yes, yeah. So I mean the pluses are the minuses, and
yeah,
the minuses
are
the pluses. If I take urban in the 2011 and 12, and I take urban, which is highly significant as 0.306,
uh-huh,
I've actually got to flip that around, and that tells me that.
So it tells you you're less likely to be employed. So
if I'm urban,
if you're youth urban, yes. Youth, so what you, the same with the head, the so years of education of the head of how of, so that's the household head, yes. When we separate also when it's not the youth, yes.
Yeah,
of
yeah,
the parents. So you would think that these things, either education of the parent because it gives you access perhaps to networks, and also urban because of Marshallian labor pool or whatever, you know, you have a higher employment probability. But that's
employment.
Yeah. But we get the opposite, because what we're comparing with is employment versus the two choices of unemployment or education. So it is very positive, because the people who are networked and the people who are in urban areas actually go have a higher education attendance at all ages. Okay. So when we do the simple probit and we compare employment versus unemployment, of course this get, you know, this become negative, this coefficient.
This is what, because I want to know if there was anything, if I was a policy maker, I would want to know what is it that has contributed to some people, even if it's a relatively small number of people, actually being successful. These people you sort of somehow deemed to be not in the game which you are actually studying, which is what they're doing otherwise. I'm really interested in the people who actually are never got into your game. What is about them? What characteristics have they got? What educational opportunities did they have? What kind of circumstances they have? Because if I'm looking for things to encourage, promote, or whatever, that's what I would be interested in. And it comes back to what I think Will and I were also saying, and this question about, does it in fact, having a job whilst you are being at school or at university, maybe facilitate you getting a job? It's one of the things which actually enhances your employability dramatically.
Okay, we have to stop here. So just a quick answer to that, Bernard, is that this analysis establishes that there is a creaming off, and then subsequent analysis can look at what is it that creams you off and what is the role of the parent networks and everything. Okay, thanks very much for staying with us and coming here.
for coming. If you have any additional questions, this is my email address. So I know that we haven't managed to explain everything because there are so many things that we did that we tried to do, so many open questions, so many things that we agreed on today. So and maybe tomorrow some new things. So I answer emails regularly. So please do ask whatever you want to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.